right, everybody. Welcome again to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast. I am Mike Sempervivi here with you. This is the podcast where we review and add a little bit of historical context to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episodes as they appear on the WWE Network. We have started off in the year of 1982, and to join me to do that, my co-host as always, Roman Gomez. Roman, how are you?
Looking forward to this crazy, chaotic week at work, and I know you work a lot, and to be able to relax and talk a little Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, it should be a fun time.
Yeah, and we know everybody's out there just grinding away here, and we want to provide you at least a little bit of sanity, try to take you out of your everyday life, try to take you back to your youth, or if you're out there exploring for new things, maybe a younger fan, you didn't live through Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, well, we want to provide you some new memories. And if you want to see some of the memories of the past, you can definitely do that by checking out all of our social media. No matter how you like to take in your social media, we are available probably via / Mid-Atlantic Pod, whether that be on Twitter and Facebook, where we are active every single day, putting up hashtag Everyday Arn, some of the best of Arn Anderson, both promos and inside the ring as well as on this day in JCP TV history, where I try to put up some video clips for you, as well as on this day, very simply in Jim Crockett Promotions history, where we stretch deep back into the past, into the 60s, into the 50s, 40s, and yes, even way back into the 30s. If we got something we can post up there, we're definitely going to do it. Twitter and Facebook both / Mid-Atlantic Pod. Sometimes we just put some audio clips up. If we do that, we'll do it at soundcloud.com/ Mid-Atlantic Pod. Sometimes we have some videos that are a little bit too long for Twitter, so you'll notice that there is a Vimeo.com address as well, too, that we will send you to, and that is / Mid-Atlantic Pod. If we have just pictures to put up, we'll do that at Instagram.com/ Mid-Atlantic Pod, and we have a YouTube as well, too, although we're going to keep that on the down low for right now. For all of your YouTube needs, including this show, you just go to YouTube.com/ Arcadian Vanguard. And if you'd like to deliver us an email, you can't do a snail mail. I'm not willing to go ahead and do a P.O. box at Briar Bend Drive or anything like that. But we do have a Gmail address as well. You just get a hold of us there at midatlanticpod@gmail.com. So we've tried to get everything covered. We've tried to make everything very uniform for you. If you see somebody out there doing some Mid-Atlantic Pod stuff and you don't think it's us, let us know. We're going to stick Stephen P. New on them. We haven't kept him on retainer yet. We can't afford that, but we got him in our back pocket in case we need him. We know how to get to that gentleman, so don't be doing any of that. Roman, might as well get right to the show here. January 16th, 1982. This show was taped on Wednesday, January 13th, 1982 at the WPCQ Channel 36 television studio in Charlotte, North Carolina. And once again, we have Bob Cottle and David Crockett introducing the show. And we're still having some issues with the wonkiest contest in televised pro wrestling history. I'm pretty sure that that's what it is here at this point. With the wrestler who contributed the most to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling in 1981. And we'll only listen to David suffer through that here for a short period of time before, as in the case with any dark cloud, we get a little bit of a silver lining. And we'll get the introductions for the matches that are going to be taking place to kick off the show.
A wrestler that's on the program, Terry Taylor. Now, he's got a lot of votes, but problem is he was not here in 1981. Right. Another one, Black Jack Mulligan Jr. He was, you know, he wasn't here in 1981 either. There are so many cards and letters. We've got that address for you. That'll come up later in the program. Also, we're going to see Austin Idol. He's right here on the program with us. And then Sergeant Slaughter, the United States Heavyweight Champion. Yeah, I know he has a few words for us.
That's right. Jake the Snake Roberts is going to be here. We got a great lineup of stars. But speaking of someone who's been getting a lot of votes, it rather surprised me, a gentleman right here behind you, David, has been just getting a bundle of votes as the wrestler who contributed the most for 1981,
yes,
Roddy
Piper. It rather surprises you, doesn't it?
You're really not.
You're surprised easy, aren't you? I just want you to know that I don't have to bother proving myself in the ring anymore. I am right now the foremost authority on wrestling. I have a program now that goes nationwide. People have asked me to come on. Yes, I've got lots of mail, and I don't blame them, because they're a good choice of character. They know what's contributed. They finally got the guts enough to just step right out and write my name down on the ballot. So I'm going to be here just for your benefit. Isn't that nice enough?
All right. Well, I have a question to ask you. Ole Anderson, the World Tag Team Championship. All right, he has a month in which to defend them. He's getting partners together to defend the championship.
That's right. Time is getting
close. That's
right.
We'd like to
have
some comments from you about
that. Well, you see, it's very interesting when he's picking a partner. He must pick someone just perfect for his particular style. He must pick someone who is like Gene, who is someone that knows his moves, someone he can communicate for, and I happen to know someone that he's got in mind who is... You don't know, do you?
No, I was going
to... But I do. You see, that's a sign of being a world champion, is don't tell everything you know. Simple.
All right, fans, that's it from Roddy Piper. We're going to watch action in the ring right now, so let's go up to the ring and the introduction for the opening match. Our opponents now for the first match, one fall, 10-minute time limit. First, from Charlotte at 235 pounds, here is Ben Alexander. Ben Alexander. His opponent across the ring, exciting youngster, from Vero Beach, 225 pounds, Terry Taylor. Terry Taylor. One fall, 10-minute time limit. We'll be ready right after we take this brief time out.
Roman, there you hear the opening. And for everyone who wonders why we came in so abruptly on David Crockett talking about who contributed the most to 1981 in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, it's just because I hate the theme music that they overlay over Don Ray's Got to Have Lovin', the original theme. And of course, we understand why they do that because of licensing issues and completely understandable, but damn it, I don't have to like it. And you hear David Crockett come in there. You didn't really miss too much with him speaking underneath the music that was playing. You hear where there's a little bit of a wonkiness, this week's wonkiness, which is people are writing in and saying this is who has contributed the most to 1981, but they're voting for Terry Taylor or for Blackjack Mulligan Jr., who spent very little time in Mid-Atlantic during 1981. Once again, this is a seemingly more trouble than it's worth, as far as at least they got the name of the thing correct this week, Roman. But thankfully, Roddy Piper was able to come in there and make the save and kind of save the opening there from those guys talking about this contest that has just begun but feels like it's never going to end.
Yeah, I thought, what a train wreck. You know, it's like Taylor was not in the area, but fans are voting for him. But then they tell you how great Taylor is because he was a rookie of the year, but he can't win the contest.
And it's like, why are you?
Then you got Mulligan Jr., who is in one of the big storyline feuds right there with Sergeant Slaughter. They keep hyping him, but he can't win the contest. And it was just a train wreck from the get-go, and they just continue going on with it.
And why can't he win the contest? I don't understand that. Why can't Barrett Blackjack Mulligan Jr., the future Barry Windham, win the contest? He had been in the area for basically half the year. I mean, he spent a lot of time in Knoxville as well, too, I guess, going back and forth because of his father owning that promotion alongside Jim Crockett Jr. and Ric Flair. But it's like, well, he was there, and really... For either one of them, if they can't win, what are you bringing it up for? Are you really getting that many letters about Terry Taylor, who just debuted on TV last week? Are you really getting that many about Terry Taylor, about who is contributing the most in 1981? Why not just concentrate on some of the people that may have been getting votes in 1981? I just baffled by that. But at least we got Roddy Piper out there for the opening. And fortunately for everybody, he's going to be a presence throughout the broadcast. But as you heard Bob Cottle mention, we got our first match, one fall, 10 minutes. Ben Alexander against the 1981 National Wrestling Alliance Rookie of the Year, supposedly Terry Taylor. Our referee for the day is actually going to be Stu Schwartz. Much like Hebner last week, it's Stu Schwartz who gets the entire day filled in here. And Roman, as we get into this match right here, we were impressed by Terry Taylor, who just came into the wrestling business. Was a natural in some ways, looks wise. I mean, had the body, picked up things very quickly, very athletic. He was just a heck of a package. And as we go into this bout here with Ben Alexander, what'd you think of what the match was? Because it went about 7 minutes, and we're going to play a little bit of audio here for you when it comes to Roddy Piper talking about the situation. But what'd you think of this match overall here with Terry Taylor and Ben Alexander?
Lots of amateur moves used in the contest, you know, kind of showcase Terry Taylor a little bit. But something I noticed right away was how quiet the crowd was. Not a lot of noise from the crowd. And in fact, it was so quiet that at one point you could hear a fan yell out, "Shut up, Roddy," as he was on commentary, which I thought was kind of funny. But Taylor looked good in the contest. But yeah, just a very quiet, subdued crowd during this contest.
It was a little bit, and during the match, we did get David Crockett to cut in to Roddy Piper to talk a little bit about Sergeant Slaughter And we mentioned Blackjack Mulligan Jr. This has been a feud that has been going on for a little while. And in the prelude edition of the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, where we talked about the lead into 1982, we mentioned that Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Sergeant Slaughter had been feuding. And there was a moment on the Christmas Eve edition of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, or was it the Christmas edition? I'd have to go back and check it, but it was one of the two where Blackjack Mulligan Jr. was trapped in the Cobra Clutch by Sergeant Slaughter as part of the $1,000 Cobra Clutch Challenge. As Blackjack Mulligan Jr. was fighting, the show went off the air. Immediately after the show went off the air, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. broke the hold. According to Sergeant Slaughter, because the show went off the air, it didn't count. Of course, if you're Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and troubleshooting NWA official Sandy Scott, you said that that was not going to be kosher and that you're going to hold on to the $1,000 until Slaughter gave Blackjack Mulligan Jr. a rematch. That, of course, upset Sergeant Slaughter up very, very much, as you can hear on the last episode of the podcast, podcast number 2 that we did, which covers the January 9th broadcast. Well, during this match, David Crockett steps in and lets us know what's been going on with Sergeant Slaughter and how he feels.
That arm drag. All right, wait a minute. Here's David. David, right.
I was just back in the dress room, and Sergeant Slaughter is going crazy.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he grabbed me. He wants his $1,000 that was held up, an injunction that Blackjack Mulligan Jr. got because of irregularities with the hole that he put on Junior.
The Cobra Clutch.
That's right. It's going to be held up until he puts the hold on. Junior gives him a second chance. That $1,000 he will not get.
So, David, what you're saying is that Sergeant Slaughter has got to give Blackjack Mulligan Jr. another opportunity to get out of the Cobra Clutch. That's right. Give him another chance.
I think that is a little ridiculous, Mr. Crockett. Don't you think you should, instead of hoodwinking him, give the man his $1,000 back? He did what he said. He put the hold on. The guy didn't get out of the hold. Right?
Well, there's a question of whether he did or did not. The fans say that he did.
And I think that if Sergeant Slaughter is so sure of himself and so sure that no one can get out of that Cobra Clutch, that he ought to be glad to put it on him again.
That's what you think, is it? That's probably why he's
the
U.S.
Sergeant
champion.
Sergeant Slaughter is so sure of himself and his hold. Why not give Blackjack Mulligan Jr. a second chance?
Well, I understand your point, but he's proved himself all the time. I don't believe there's any man in the world that can get out of the Cobra Clutch. He's proved himself. Time ran out was what the
then
problem was.
Then he has
was,
nothing
right?
to worry about, does he?
A very tough regulation the NWA has set down.
So there you hear Roddy Piper give his opinion on David Crockett and Bob Cottle, giving their opinion on Sergeant Slaughter and Blackjack Mulligan Jr., as we mentioned last week. Sandy Scott held the money up, put it in the escrow account, I guess, of the Crockett Promotions, and that $1,000 is being held there until we get a little bit more clarity out of Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Sergeant Slaughter. Piper would not stop during this match, giving a little bit of the business to Terry Taylor and Roman, as he did last week when Terry Taylor was out there wrestling. Kind of just dismissing Taylor. Everything Taylor would do, as you mentioned, there was a lot of good amateur wrestling, a lot of good babyface work out of Terry Taylor, and Roddy Piper would just dismiss him and do it in that very Roddy Piper way where it's like, yeah, that was good, but, you know, he couldn't have beat me with it, but, you know, it wasn't bad for him. And then, of course, also kind of pushing Ben Alexander or pushing whoever the opponent of Terry Taylor was as trying to root for them very subtly. He did that same thing with Ben Alexander here, and going to play a little bit of audio from the show that you had actually mentioned a little bit earlier on, as far as the crowd being at, I guess some would say, rapt attention for this, basically just not making too much noise, and we can hear where the fan gave a little bit of the business to Roddy Piper.
I got to ask you this, because I know all the fans at home are saying this. Is Roddy Piper jealous of Terry Taylor?
Jealous.
Is he jealous of that young man in the ring? Jealous of his ability, of his good looks, of his body?
How silly. That guy's probably got 6 pictures of me on his wall. Been watching me ever since he was a 22. Jealous of what? When you're number one, you don't have to be just nice. Move on the
really
part of Alexander. Now you just watch us, Alexander, go to work. Come on, Ben.
Shut up, Roddy! There was here in the background the shut up, Roddy, from the angry woman in the crowd there. But 7 minutes, almost on the nose in 7 minutes, Terry Taylor went ahead and got the victory. And from there, we move on to our next match. One fall, 10 minutes. Austin Idol against Mike Davis. Once again, as I mentioned, referee Stu Schwartz, as he was for all of the matches. And for all of the matches, we get Roddy Piper continuing to be on commentary. And Idol gave Davis a little bit earlier on. This match also went about 7 minutes. I clocked it in at 7 minutes and 4 seconds from bell to bell, although there was not action that entire time, as Austin Idol did need ample time to get his robe off, needed Mike Davis to be chased away into the corner, needed to make sure that he took his robe off, did a little shimmy and shaking, and making sure that everybody saw the universal heartthrob. Idol, late in the match, started to go to work on the right leg of Mike Davis, which led to the Las Vegas leg lock being applied. And, you know, Roman, you're out there in Las Vegas. Do you ever remember seeing Austin Idol out there? Probably not, because he never liked to leave the southeastern area. But Austin Idol, we get to see our first appearance from him in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, at least on the TV that we are reviewing here. And Idol was a guy who came into the area on May 9th, 1981. That's as early as I could find him coming into the area, defeated Ricky Steamboat. He would leave on July 5th, 1981, after a loss to Ricky Steamboat. Both of those matches were in Greensboro, by the way. He had come back to the area on August 28th in Lynchburg, losing to Ric Flair by disqualification. And after he had taken the holidays of 1981 off from the Carolinas, departing after working in Knoxville on December 11th, where he competed as a fan favorite, defeating Kevin Sullivan by disqualification, this TV match with Mike Davis was his second match back in after losing to Jimmy Valiant the night before in Raleigh. And Austin Idol can be one of those guys who is very polarizing. If you did not grow up in the Southeast or grow up familiar with Austin Idol, you would look at him and maybe you look at him as a takeoff of some of your other favorite wrestlers, whether it be a Ric Flair or whoever. But those of you who grew up in Memphis or grew up in the Pensacola area or wherever it was that Austin Idol, Georgia Championship Wrestling, where he had a lot of influence and was seen a lot more, you would say that he's undeniable and there's no imitation when it comes to Austin Idol. He is just as valid as any of your other favorites out there. Where did you fall on the scale when it came to the universal heartthrob Austin Idol?
Always liked Austin Idol, and one phrase that comes to mind when I think of him, constantly comes to my mind, is big fish in a little pond. I would have loved to seen him have a major run in the NWA or the WWF. I mean, he came in, he wrestled some on Georgia, he was seen on the Superstation, but he never went big time. And I'll never forget an interview I saw with Bam Bam Bigelow where he said that Austin Idol was the Hulk Hogan before Hulk Hogan. He had the long hair, the tan build. He would cup his hand to his ear, beg the crowd for applause, and he coined the phrase Idol Mania. Idol Mania is running wild. And a few years later, all of a sudden, Hulk Hogan's in the WWF, but Hulkamania is running wild. And, you know, but it was just kind of an interesting parallel that Bigelow drew there. And, yeah, I always liked Idol. Very charismatic. Always liked his promos, called everybody Jackson or Dolan. He was just full of energy and a good wrestler. I always enjoyed watching Austin Idol.
Next up on the show was a promo, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. And since we have been doing the show, this is the first time we have seen Blackjack Mulligan Sr. on the air. He has been in Knoxville, as well as many other places. As we mentioned, he's the co-owner of that territory. I'm just going to play Junior's part of the promo here, because the first part of the promo was just Bob Kyle kind of talking to Blackjack about his son and how it's a little bit tough to stand to the side and watch your kinfolk out there getting into the grappling. So I'm going to go ahead and play Blackjack Mulligan Jr.'s part of the promo, which continues to focus on his issues with Sergeant Slaughter and everything going on with the $1,000 Cobra Clutch Challenge.
I did ask Senior, I asked him to promise me that he would let me do some things on my own, that no matter what, that he would stay at home, because that's what he's always wanted to do, is stay at home and do what he wanted to do. I don't need for him to come and save me all the time. Just because somebody gangs up on me or something, I can take care of myself. I really can. And I don't need you, Senior. I mean, I need you, but I don't need you to come running every time.
Not to fight your battle.
That's right. I'm very serious about it. And as of right now, the thing with Slaughter. I know that he's heard about it.
Yeah, the $1,000, by the way.
That's right. I took it upon myself to go ahead and do that. I've got lawyers and all the other stuff, everything you need. I went out on my own. I didn't ask him to help me. And Slaughter's not going to get that money back no matter what until he gives me another chance, because I did get out of that hold. It may not have been while the TV was still on the air or whatever, but I was out of it. And I'm ready for Slaughter again if he'll get in the ring. That's step number one, and I'm ready to go.
You still feel like, and you're convinced you can get out of that.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I did. Whether Slaughter believes it or not, the TV did go off the air. I wish we had the rest of the tape or whatever, but there is no tape. All that can happen is just we have to do it one more time, Slaughter, and you're not getting your money back until that happens.
I can see why you're proud of this man, because he can stand on his own 2 feet.
He can definitely stand on his 2 feet, as the whole wrestling world's going to find out. You know, I sit here, I listen to Junior talk. It's like myself 10 years ago, 15 years ago talking. I think about the time I busted up the Pee Wee football game because I didn't think things were going right out there, and it was a riot at the Pee Wee football game, the West Texas State-Colorado State game, when the big tackle out there, I messed the whole game. I would jump the referee and beat the heck out of the coach. Well, you can't do those things anymore. I will be available. I will help you only if you ask me. I will be here standing by. If Junior needs help, he's got my help. Let me tell you something. As a tag team, we ain't pretty bad. We're not too bad. We got a little tape of something I'd like to see. VTR, me and Junior in action together. If we could go to that, Bob.
Hey, yeah, I want to see that, and I know the fans do too. Let's watch them in action.
At that point, they play a tape from, I'm not sure if it was East Coast Wrestling. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was the tape of the Mulligans facing off against Private Nelson and Ricky Harris, the future Boris Zukov and Black Bart together. Not a long match, but Black Jack Mulligan Sr. pinned Black Bart after he locked the claw on and he got the three count there. So
I thought it was interesting that as a babyface, Mulligan talked about beating up the coach and roughing up the ref. And it's kind of a weird thing for a babyface to say, but I thought it was good. They were trying to establish Wyndham, saying that he can do it on his own, you know, which I thought was good. As far as a tag match goes, it was a good match. Lots of tags. It was kind of cool to see a legit father and son, Mulligan and Wyndham, in a tag match. And it was really nice to actually see a crowd that was into the match. A little bit different than the first two matches from the TV studio. But, that was my thoughts on that.
Yeah, that was an arena taped encounter, as you will see sometimes on these shows. Again, and I don't know if it had aired on East Coast Wrestling. I don't know if it was just something that they had taped that they decided to do a voiceover on. I'm not sure exactly what the logistics were that led into that. But, you know, he's out there. But you still got to be Black Jack Mulligan, I guess, even if you are a good guy technically on that side of the ledger. You still got to make sure that people know you're a little bit nuts. You're a little bit crazy. You know, you ever see Back to School? Who played Uncle Paulie in the Rocky movies, who was in that movie? I forget the guy's. Burt Young, I think his name was. I can't remember. Right. But, you know, it's when he's talking about his sons. And it's like, you know, I'm firm, but I'm fair. You know, my one son, I put him through college. My other son, I put him through a wall. You know, that's kind of how Black Jack Mulligan Sr. was, I guess, as a baby face. But, you know, I guess I'll remind everybody, too. I'll take everybody back to why this is all taking place with Barry Windham. And I keep doing that with Black Jack Mulligan Jr. and with Sergeant Slaughter. That $1,000, basically what happened was, on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, what they decided to do was, before Christmas, was take a two-week break. That way, between December 14th and December 24th, everything shut down. You wouldn't have to worry about anything. The guys could do what they wanted to do, celebrate Hanukkah, celebrate Christmas, go to a different territory. Sonny Fargo could go across the mountains again and be roughhouse, do all that sort of stuff. But what happened was when they taped the show, what they had was Black Jack Mulligan Jr. having the hold put on him by Sergeant Slaughter. And Mulligan ended up as the over kind of arching part of this whole thing is when the show went off the air, even though he didn't break it while the show was on, as the credits were rolling, you see Mulligan starting to power out. And they leave it as a cliffhanger and make you wonder what happened. And ultimately, the show goes off the air. Black Jack Mulligan Jr. powers out of the hold. And it was probable that people were going to pass that word along because there was going to be a show on Christmas night, on December 25th. And the main event there, Black Jack Mulligan Jr. against Sergeant Slaughter for the United States title. And they needed to make sure that you knew that Black Jack Mulligan Jr. was on the same level. So one of the ways they teased that was by having him go ahead and do that. And then on Christmas night, he battled the champion to a different kind of draw, which was a time limit Broadway of 60 minutes. So that's basically where we're at as we lead into this episode of the show and all of the back and forth that is going to be taking place between Black Jack Mulligan Jr. and Sergeant Slaughter coming up here in the next couple of weeks. Up next on the show, Ole and Gene Anderson join Bob Caudle with Ole demanding more time to find a partner to defend the NWA World Tag Team Championship. He says he's only got 17 or 18 days left. And if anybody else wanted more time, they'd get it, but of course not him. Once Ole was finished and Gene and he walked away, Sergeant Slaughter and Private Jim Nelson joined Bob Caudle on the set, and Slaughter had a little bit of a retort for the Mulligans.
Sergeant Slaughter right here, and a little earlier we heard from Black Jack Mulligan Jr., and I understand you're still irate about your $1,000.
That's right. You know, I heard that interview out here with him and Senior, and all that was missing was a violin. But I'm telling you what, Junior, I can't get my $1,000 back until I give you another shot at the Cobra Clutch Challenge. Is $1,000 that much to you? Does a pain mean that much to you, $1,000 worth of pain? I don't think I should have to put you through that pain for $1,000. But if you want the pain, I'll put the $1,000 up. We'll get into the ring. I'll put the Cobra Clutch on you, and you'll be begging for mercy, boy, because I've had it with you. And your old man, the Cobra Clutch is unbreakable. You cannot get out of the Cobra Clutch. There's only excuses for the Cobra Clutch. And you have my $1,000, and that money belongs to me because I call that Cobra Clutch challenge off. Isn't that right, Nelson?
Sir, yes, sir.
I can't hear you, Nelson.
Sir, yes, sir.
Nelson knows it. He knows how devastating that hold is. And I'm telling you right now, Junior, if you don't quit messing around and giving my money back, you're going to get hurt, and you're going to get hurt bad, because I'm done messing around with punks like you. I took this boy and made him into a man. I'm going to take a man and make him into a boy, because that's what the Cobra Clutch can do to you, make you at my mercy.
Well, there you hear Sergeant Slaughter, along with that very loud fan in the background, Roman. I don't know if it was that quiet in the studio or that fan was just that loud there, the screaming the shut up there in the background as Sergeant Slaughter was getting it on there. She would have been seemingly better set to be watching Austin Idol in around 1980 in the TBS studios as loud as she was right there. But we then got the introductions for our next match, Jake the Snake Roberts against Big Bill White. During the match, Bob Caudle asked Roddy Piper about not wrestling on TV. This is something that came up last week when David Crockett told Bob Caudle that Roddy Piper has demanded that he not speak on TV or not wrestle on TV. He didn't give a real answer as to why that is the case, but then Bob asked him about the plight of Ole Anderson again.
I think I got to ask you about, I was astounded earlier when Ole Anderson says, give me more time, give me more time to have to defend my World Tag Team Championship belt. A man like Ole, it's almost like Ole Anderson was begging for more time, begging, begging.
Well, I don't know that he was begging. I saw a note of concern, yes. I will admit that. I saw, because I'm honest and true, I will notice just a touch of concern there, but he is the world's champion and deserves a respect.
We hear Roddy Piper weigh in on that situation with Ole Anderson. You also heard Roddy Piper say at the very beginning of the broadcast he's got a show that goes nationwide, and we mentioned this on the Prelude edition of the show. In the beginning of October, Roddy Piper got a second job as announcer on Georgia Championship Wrestling alongside Gordon Solie. So he wasn't kidding about the fact that all of his knowledge was going worldwide there in Roman. But this is a relatively pedestrian match, which is just to give Jake Roberts a win and kind of move things forward. Went about 5 minutes and 7 seconds. Jake Roberts got the knee lift victory, and after the match, in the background, you can see Austin Idol kind of saunter out there in a pink shirt before Jake Roberts leaves the ring, and there's nothing special to that other than not sure why or what he was doing out there. Odds are he was moseying over to cut a promo, but we don't get to see that on the WWE Network version of the show, so I'm not exactly sure what went on there. It could have been to hype up the match in Greensboro coming up on January 17th. where he would team up against Terry Gordy against Michael Hayes and Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant. I'm not sure if that's what it was for or what went on there, but we instead moved right into our next match, which was Sergeant Slaughter against Buddy Landell.
Fans, don't forget, we want you to participate. We want you to name the wrestler who contributed the most to Mid-Atlantic Wrestling in the year 1981.
P-I-P-E-R. And how do you spell relief?
It's up to you, and you fans are going to name the winner of that. A little later on, we're having a big trophy made right now, Roddy. A little later on, we're going to show that all of you fans. But we want you to send right now your vote, your ballot, for the wrestler who contributed the most in 1981 to 421 Briar Bend, 421 Briar Bend, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28209. Get that in the mail right away. We're getting bags and bags of mail already.
I like bagpipes on my trophy. There's no one that can deny. Really, those points, seriously, you know, as I just sneakily look at Slaughter. Tremendous weight when he throws that knee. Watch how he throws his whole body behind it, getting the utmost out of that knee. A lot of people just use the limb they're working. Slaughter has got his whole body behind it. That's what's important.
I think the thing that's most important is the fact that Bob Cottle said the contest name correctly. We have an address for the contest. And we also know for sure that Roddy Piper is terrible with transitions. As great as he is doing this broadcast, he can just trail off one thing and go right into another, which, again, as he's talking down on somebody like, you know, Terry Taylor, he's a good wrestler, good amateur. He's got this is going pretty good. That's going pretty good. I mean, I could beat him in about 5 minutes, but, you know, it's fine. When he's doing that, it's pretty good. But there are a couple times on this show, including right there, we'll just kind of trail off and just move on to the next thing. But hey, we finally got the address, which is an address that almost all of you who have been watching Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling for any period of time would know. That is 421 Barry Bend Drive in Charlotte, North Carolina. So, Roman, we finally got the address. Are you going to write in retroactively to tell us who you think contributed the most to Mid-Atlantic in 1981?
Well, I like how you said, Mike, a while back, like, how were they receiving these letters and these votes when they hadn't given an address yet? But yet they were still getting tons of letters and votes in the mail for people like Terry Taylor, who was not in the area, but he was good enough to win Rookie of the Year.
People still had the address, I guess, left over from the Wish Ric Flair well after the plane crash ones. All the ones that he would ultimately tear up on TV when he came back from the injury just to secure him being the most hated man in Mid-Atlantic for years on end after that, until he was the most popular guy in Mid-Atlantic. Around this time with Roddy Piper, frankly, coming in the area was one of the big things that changed that. In, I guess, what would that have been, 80-81, when we got Buddy Rogers and that whole crew, Jimmy Snuka, the Iron Sheik, Ray Stevens, Roddy Piper, some nefarious heels, which ultimately put Ric Flair on the flip side of the proceedings here. But this was another short match, about 5 minutes and 30 seconds. And again, now we got two about 5 minute matches. We had 3 7-minute matches, if you include the tape that had the Mulligans on it against Black Bart and Private Nelson. Not a whole lot here to really dig into. This was a fun main event between he and Buddy Landell. Again, Landell, as we've talked about on this show, talk about a natural early. And you can see him getting a little bit bigger by the week, gets a little bit better by the week. And it was a relatively one-sided, but still a fun TV show main event where Slaughter got the win, but he couldn't lock on the Cobra Clutch, and he ultimately won with a small package, which was a real surprise. And we'll get into why that happened, but Roman, as you're watching it and you see him try to lock it on and you see Buddy Landell fight it off and then you go to the small package, what were you thinking when you kind of saw the finish there?
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, like you said, for a guy who had a finisher like the Cobra Clutch to win on an inside cradle that just seemed to come out of nowhere, it was kind of surprising, but I did like the fact that they showed Buddy Landell showing promise. You know, it was really interesting to see Buddy Landell early on in his career, promising young up-and-comer. That inside cradle coming from Slaughter just seemed to come completely out of nowhere, and I was kind of surprised to see a finish like that.
Yeah, and they don't overhype those guys, you know, like Buddy Landell and Mike Davis, but you can tell the guys that they have a glimmer of hope for, or new enough where they're not sure exactly what's going to go down yet, because, you know, how they speak about those gentlemen in comparison to a Ben Alexander or a Bill White, is quite distinct, and they've done that with Buddy Landell, always, you know, always climbing, always scratching, always clawing. He may not be on the level of a Terry Taylor, but he's right behind that, just trying to go out there and get his, and was one of the guys that fought off the Sergeant Slaughter Cobra Clutch Challenge, not actually during the challenge, but in a ring during the match. And as you mentioned, inside cradle, and here's why we ended up having that, because there was a little bit of action afterwards as we ended the show.
As Landell was back to the ropes, and is he going to set him up for the Cobra Clutch?
He's trying. He's very good.
Oh, Landell saw that coming.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Arm drag. Quickly now. He's on the attack. Buddy Landell with a slam, and he's got Sergeant Slaughter on the run right now.
You see, look, he lacks a little aggression. To heck with Jim Nelson. Don't look over there. Look at what you're doing.
Tremendous showing by the young man, and he may have sealed his own doom right there by not going ahead and trying to finish Slaughter off. In the small package,
it's his own fault, just like I told him, concentrate on what you're doing. Young man that got defeated, unfortunately.
He looked around, and he spent several seconds there in conversation,
yep,
really trying to get at
Slaughter.
Jim Nelson. And Slaughter now is going to get him from behind.
There you go. There you go. Teach him to something.
Just clotheslined him, coming off, and now he looks like he's going to try to get him in the Cobra Clutch. He is. He's going to put it on him right here in the ring now. The match is over.
Do you understand what's going on? He's giving a lesson to everybody out there, Junior. Don't fool with Sergeant Bob Slaughter right now. He knows people
are watching. Jim Nelson is holding the referee back in the corner. The referee can't get out to help Landell. The match is over. Slaughter is won. There's no sense in this. No reason for it.
Get somebody out here. Landell's in trouble.
No, no reason at all. Roddy Piper, why didn't you break that up?
What for?
As he slams him right through the ropes. And here is Blackjack Mulligan Jr. charging into the ring. Sergeant Slaughter, Jim Nelson, both in there. Slaughter very quickly leaves the ring. Nelson trying to get out.
Roman, there everybody heard how everything ended up going down. Private Jim Nelson jumped up on the apron, did not get involved in the match, and really was not up there very long. But it was enough time to distract Landell. Didn't really factor into the finish that much as well, too. I mean, it's not like, you know, Slaughter didn't just surprise him from behind and roll him up. He was actually facing him, and they went on for a little bit longer. But then after the match, Landell did go after Nelson, which allowed Slaughter to attack him from behind. Jim Nelson then held back the referee as Slaughter put the Cobra Clutch on Buddy Landell until Blackjack Mulligan Jr. came out to break all of that up. And what you also heard there was Roddy Piper just be a great prick. You know, oh my God, somebody's got to come out here and help Buddy Landell, man. Somebody, he really needs it. And then, of course, Bob asked, well, why don't you go break it up? Why bother? It's just classic Piper. And this is an easy watch, that's for sure. And as you mentioned earlier on, you know, probably the most notable thing out of it is the fact that we get to see Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Sr. together as a tag against Jim Nelson and Black Bart, the future Black Bart, Ricky Harris. So, Roman, it seems like in comparison to some shows we've done, this is we have sprinted by here. Do you have anything to put a bow on this show? Do you have anything else to add as we go off the air here?
This episode, to me, kind of showcases the greatness of Roddy Piper. The man did not wrestle on the show, but he was easily the star of the show. Piper interviews, he's known for being wild and crazy and whatnot, but as a commentator, there were lots of times where he's very analytic. If you go back and watch the Jake Roberts match, he talks about how Jake is taller than his opponent and that that's an advantage. And then he goes on to compare it to armies going on top of a hill so they can look down on their opponent and have a psychological advantage. And just Piper was very analytic in ways, and I enjoyed his commentary, and he definitely was an asset to this show because the crowd was rather lackluster for parts of the show, and just hearing Piper on commentary actually brought a little bit of life to this episode.
It did, and a lot of talk is always about Roddy Piper's work on Georgia Championship Wrestling, and deservedly so, because he was able to play it out to a national audience, but most people didn't realize that Roddy Piper was putting in not only some great work on TBS, but double the great work on the microphone over in Mid-Atlantic. And when we come to what else was happening that week in the territory, we can let you know that the night before this show took place in Charleston, South Carolina, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. defeated Big John Studd in a Texas cage match. Not sure exactly what the rules were for a Texas cage match. I'm going to have to go ahead and look those up. But What is a fact is Mulligan Sr. and John Studd are still feuding. Also, Ox Baker and Carl Fergie retain the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship by defeating Jay Youngblood and Jake Roberts in a no-disqualification match. Over in Richmond, Sergeant Slaughter faced off against Blackjack Mulligan Jr., while Roddy Piper faced off against Rick Steamboat. On the 17th, the next day, in Toronto at Maple Leaf Gardens, there was a loaded-up card which saw Angelo Mosca defeat John Studd to win the NWA Canadian Championship in a steel cage match. Johnny Weaver knocked off Lord Alfred Hayes, also in a cage match. Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura defeated Tony Parisi and Dominic DiNucci in an AWA feature attraction. The WWF heavyweight champion Bob Backlund knocked off Greg the Hammer Valentine, and Pat Patterson defeated Kurt Von Hess. In Greensboro, NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair defeated Sergeant Slaughter by disqualification. Ricky Steamboat defeated Billy Robinson, who was subbing for Ivan Koloff. And Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Jake Roberts defeated Ox Baker and Carl Fergie, but unfortunately did not win the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team titles. 2 days later in Greenville, Ole Anderson and Austin Idol defeated Ray Stevens and Leroy Brown. In Columbia on the 19th, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jr. defeated Slaughter and Private Nelson. While in Raleigh on the same day, Roddy Piper and Austin Idol went to a double disqualification against Jimmy Valiant and Bad Bad Leroy Brown. That leads us to the 20th and more tapings at the WPCQ Studios, which we will talk about on this show next week, where we get more information on the NWA World Tag Team title situation, some very, very important information on what's going to be taking place, as well as seeing Sergeant Slaughter and Don Kernoodle, Jake Roberts and Jay Youngblood in tag team action, along with Terry Taylor, Austin Idol, Porkchop Cash, and Stan Hansen, a tape from the WWF featuring Killer Khan, plus appearances by Ray Stevens, the Mulligans, and Ricky Steamboat. So what this show was lacking a little bit, we will get it all in spades next week, Roman. And you know what? Right before we get out of here, too, I know that Mid-Atlantic was not your home territory, but you have done a lot of research and looked at things. Blackjack Mulligan, just a legend. And again, we saw him for the first time on this show this week. We're going to see him plenty more as the episodes and as the years go by. A legend in the Mid-Atlantic area, had debuted in Greenville, I believe it was, on March 3rd, 1975. He defeated Charlie Cook. He ended up winning the U.S. title from Paul Jones by March of 1976. He ended up winning the title three more times, traded it with Paul Jones. Then he lost it to Bobo Brazil, which ultimately set up Ric Flair to win the title in 1977. Mulligan would win it again from Ricky Steamboat on January 1st, 1978, before dropping it to Mr. Wrestling Tim Woods, which would be the last time he held the title, on March 19th, 1978. And, you know, when we talk about Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, for me, and I may be wrong to call this the modern era anymore, but for me, the modern era of Mid-Atlantic begins around 1973, after the death of Jim Crockett Sr. And most certainly, the new era begins to me by the time the U.S. title is crowned on January 1st, 1975, when Harley Race wins that. Made me think here about if you had a modern era of, and this is early on, this is not the era that we're talking about, but basically that development era that takes us into 77, 78 as Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat explode. If you were to make a Mount Rushmore of the times, who would you put on it? Because there are a couple of names. There's Paul Jones, there's the Andersons, there's Wahoo, there's Johnny Valentine. But no matter who it is you put on there, I think Blackjack Mulligan Sr.'s got to be one of those guys. For me, I think it would be Blackjack Mulligan Sr., Johnny Valentine for sure, Wahoo McDaniel, and then I guess Paul Jones, just because if I'm not allowed to put the Andersons together there as a team, I guess I would put Paul Jones there because of how he was as being the number one babyface when he was in there and being so dominant and being so important to so much of what was going on. I think that's who I would choose. Who would you choose to put on yours?
Wow, that's something. That is an awesome question. I have not really thought about the Mount Rushmore aspect, but I would definitely have to go with the Andersons, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. When I think of Mid-Atlantic, they always pop into my head. Wahoo, which you alluded to. I'm going to put Steamboat on there, too. It's hard to exclude Steamboat from any list, especially with all the accomplishments he had. Man, you caught me kind of off guard. I'd have to give that a little more thought, but those would be a few of the names. Definitely the Andersons, Wahoo, and Steamboat are three that I would put on there for sure.
Well, that's, yeah, too, especially if you go past, you know, if he, once you hit like 77, 78, it's like, well, it's got to be Ric Flair. It's got to be Ricky Steamboat. And then from there, you know, and from there again, too, it's like, is it the Andersons? Probably. Is it Greg Valentine? I would probably put Greg Valentine there. But again, that is so much great banter. And, you know, I'm actually, you know what, folks, I think that would be a great way to get some interaction going here. You know, I would love to. Drop us a line at midatlanticpod@gmail.com. Let us know on Facebook. We have a Facebook group as well, too. And I tell you, I'm terrible with Facebook, everybody. I really am. I'm posting up the daily stuff to Facebook. I've never been in a Facebook group before. We have started one up for the show. Hopefully, we can get some discussion going in there. But yeah, of the modern times, again, from the post-death of Jim Crockett Sr., from when Jim Ringley got in there, and then ultimately Jim Crockett Jr. taking it over, bringing in George Scott, from that time to 1977, let's say, from that time, no, to 1978, right to Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat, because that was late summer, fall of 1978. But from the transition from the Eastern States times, from the transition of the tag team era into the U.S. Championship era, into the new era, who would be on your Mount Rushmore? Paul Jones, the Andersons, Wahoo, Johnny Valentine, Blackjack Mulligan, the Spoiler? Is he one of those guys that you would put up there? Who is it, folks? I want to know. This would probably make for a pretty darn fun show, and it certainly is going to make for some fun banter. So I really want you to do that. Go over to the Facebook group, facebook.com/midatlanticpod, or drop me a line on Twitter as well, twitter.com/midatlanticpod, or over in our Gmail, like we said, midatlanticpod@gmail.com. Let us know who you would put in there, and also let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us just know what you think here. We're doing this show for you. Not only is it for us, but it's definitely for you too. It's for my memories. It's for your memories. It's to create new memories. And Roman, you got any parting shots here for me or the people?
Yeah, I would just like to say that, you know, I appreciate the support. You know, Mike, like you had mentioned, we've got already over 700 followers on Twitter. And hopefully you guys give us a legit, honest chance. You know, Mike and I are new as partners in the podcast game. And we promise to keep getting better and better. And I know Mike definitely does his research, does his homework. He's very knowledgeable. I'm doing my research. I'm trying to get more and more knowledgeable. And hopefully we will be a great tag team that you guys will want to listen to every week. And just give us a chance and just know that we plan on getting better and better. And hopefully we brighten your week.
And as you heard the beep of the phone there too, the audio quality is going to get better and better because Roman's getting himself a computer with all this money he's making off of this show right now.
Yes, I am. I've got the microphone. I got to get a new computer, and hopefully I'll sound a little bit better, especially with your editing prowess. You'll make me sound a little more like an announcer.
Hot damn, I will. And ladies and gentlemen, I am terrible. If you've heard some of the other shows, I am terrible with goodbyes. So I will just let it go right here and let Bob Cottle give the goodbye that we all want to hear.
There's that enough for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.
And until then, folks, so long for now. The Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.